This is Life to Listen.
Want to see the world from a totally different perspective?
Ready for provocative conversation?
Intriguing stories?
And inspiration?
Then don't touch that dial.
Welcome
to Talk with Francesca.
She'll give you something to talk about all week long.
Now, here's Francesca.
What if you took the time?
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talk with Francesca. I'm Francesca Lupi, your host, and I am excited to be with you here today. I want you to talk to me. Let me know what you're thinking. Is there a show suggestion that you want to make, a question you might have for one of my guests or for me? Or just do you want to tell me what's on your mind? I'm here. Email me at info@talkwithfrancesca.com. Or you can also go right to my website, talkwithfrancesca.com, and fill out the contact form. Also, you can visit me on Facebook, and I promise I will get right back to you. If you miss part of this show, you can go to my recent shows on my website. Again, the website address is talkwithfrancesca.com, and you can listen there. And my awesome intern just got me on iTunes, so I'm very excited about that. Thank you, Maria. All right, we're going to get started. We've got lots to cover today. Do you really understand men? You might want to get a pen and paper to take notes. Why? Because James Bond, an award-winning behavioral management specialist and founder of the Father-Daughter Project and the regional leader for the Mankind Project, is here with us now. He has written The Secret Life of Fathers, An Unexpected Guide to Understanding Men and Fathers. So welcome, James. So excited to have you joining us today on Talk with Francesca.
Hi, Francesca. Great to be here.
So do tell, do daughters really have that much influence over their dads?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, tell us why.
Well, let me tell you how this started, and so you can get a frame of reference of like how this all came about. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So for 13 years, I ran a behavioral management firm working with some of the largest organizations in the world. Then I discovered that my relationship with my middle daughter—I have three daughters—my middle daughter wasn't as great as I thought, and I wondered if other dads were as clueless as me about the relationship with their daughter. So I started interviewing other fathers of daughters on recorded calls eventually, and it was mind-blowing. I mean, it was so profound. I guess because of my behavioral management background, I was able to get them to talk about things that were really deep that we never hear guys talk about.
And, well, your daughter's very lucky that she has a dad like you that is so interested.
Well, but I'm also clueless. So my wife has a great question, and she says, if you wanted a better relationship with your daughter, shouldn't you have started by interviewing your daughter?
Okay.
And
okay.
So I learned
I'm not... a fair thing to say, but...
Well, okay. I learned I'm not the only dad that's clueless. So it gave me comfort interviewing all these other dads to start with. But I started learning things about men that was, that were really profound. And, like a lot of the women who read the book go like, wow, first I was reading it because I was trying to understand, men and fathers and all that stuff. But that they start to understand things about men that they didn't understand before. You know, things like, it's amazing how many men are afraid of women.
Afraid?
In subtle
Is that what
ways.
You said? Afraid?
Afraid, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Scared. Women are scary. Hey, they cry. They
emotional. Men don't love tears. It's true. Yeah.
So a lot of women don't know this. I guess many guys don't know this also, but men are brain damaged.
Well, I really wanted to touch upon that because that's a pretty strong thing to say. Could you share with us what you mean by that?
Absolutely, absolutely. So in the womb, so we have the left brain and the right brain, the left side of the brain, the right side of the brain, and it's connected by something called the corpus callosum. It's connective tissue. It's like wiring that connects the left and the right brain together. And in the womb, boys get a rush of testosterone. And testosterone eats away at the corpus callosum. It literally melts away over much of the corpus callosum and breaks the connection between the left brain and the right brain. It doesn't totally break it, but it mostly or much of it gets broken. So what happens is the speech and problem-solving part of the brain is disconnected from the emotion side of the brain. So the theory is, back in the olden days when we needed to hunt, wild animals and dinosaurs or whatever, we needed to be able to turn off our emotion in order to survive, because you can't get overwhelmed with emotion if there's this fierce animal. You've got to just know what to do and then just do it. The problem is that we have a disconnect between the emotion and the speech side of our brain when we go into relationships. And guys, as many of your women out there will know, will often not tell you what's going on emotionally. And a large part of that is because men have difficulty making the connection between the left brain and the right brain.
Well, boy, that's a big surprise, because for years it's always been that men were taught not to cry because they would be a baby, right? So that's quite different than what you're saying. It was all about how men were raised.
Well, and here's the thing. It's many women don't understand this, that it's very easy to hurt a man's feelings, okay? But when have you ever heard a guy say, "You hurt my feelings"? Guys don't say that. And yet, hurting a guy's feelings may be the most common reason why relationships break up. That it starts festering inside the guy, and he's like, you hurt his feelings, you made him feel bad or whatever else, and it sort of builds and it goes on, and suddenly the relationship falls apart simply because she doesn't understand that she hurt his feelings, and he doesn't know how to communicate that, or he's not able to communicate that. Can I tell you a quick story?
Do, please, yes.
So this is how disconnected I am, but it seems to be pretty common. So my wife has long blonde hair, and she decided to get a perm and got her hair cut really short. And she got it dyed brown for some reason. And so she came in with curly, short hair. This is a long blonde girl. And she came in the front door and said, "Oh, hey, what do you think?" And I looked at it and immediately said, "Oh, you look terrible." And she started crying. And she said, she was just experimenting with my hair. I didn't know she was going to do this. And she rushes back into the car and drives back to the place. And then they're closing, and she's pounding on the window, "You've got to let me in. You've got to change this."
Well, what is she going to do, tape her hair back on?
Well, my daughter said, "Why did you make Mom cry?" And I said, "She asked me the question, how does it look?" So I gave her an answer. Now, women would understand that, she asked me a question. I pause and say, "Well, here's the answer, but wait a second, it's probably going to hurt her feelings." I didn't want to hurt her feelings. I was just answering a question. But it took us a while before it got to the emotional side, saying, "Wait, danger, danger. You don't want to say it that way. You're going to make hurt her feelings."
Right.
So I didn't try to hurt her feelings. I just answered her question because she asked it, because my emotional side, and I'm not excusing it, but I'm just saying communicating the emotional piece and connecting the emotional side with speech, it can be problematic for guys.
Well, that's just a big, but I mean, I really didn't realize that it had to do with the brain. I really understood it as the way men were brought up, right? I mean, way men are brought up is as I said earlier, a few minutes ago, don't cry, don't show your emotions, right?
And never let them see you sweat. Absolutely.
Right.
Yep.
But why do you think men do hide their emotions?
There's a primal, it's believed that there's a primal reason. And the primal reason is men can't show vulnerability. Back in caveman days, if you show vulnerability, you're going to get killed by some marauder or, an animal or whatever else. Mm-hmm. And so somehow it's wired into us. Now, there's certainly culturally, there's a lot of, there's a lot of cultural influence that we have that, that makes men not show a vulnerability as well. But it seems like it's wired into us, because it is so primal in many ways that men don't cry or aren't supposed to cry, just not show vulnerability.
Well, I think that women say sometimes that they want a man who is more sensitive and who does show vulnerability. But frankly, I'm not really convinced that that's so. I think that, you know, sure, we want someone who is understanding and someone who you can have a conversation with of some depth, but I think it only goes so far. And I think that what coming from a woman's perspective, and I think a lot of women feel this way, and at least my friends tell me that they do, and I believe that to be the case, I think that when men get too far on the feminine side, I think it makes women a little uncomfortable.
Well, we don't want to turn men into women, and we don't want to turn women into men, mm-hmm. but we do want men to be more collaborative. We also want men to voice their emotions. If I hurt your feelings, you know, I want to know. If you don't tell me, how am I going to know? Mm-hmm. But my daughters, I want them to be tougher, because this can be a really tough world for women. Oh, and men yeah. will often take advantage. Many men will take advantage of women, but some women will take advantage too. And I want my daughters to be able to defend themselves. But I don't want to turn them into guys, and I don't want to turn men into women. But there's a balance between the two, where, you know, we want guys to be collaborative. We want guys to ask opinions. We want guys to listen. And we don't, you know, sometimes we're not listening to understand, we're listening to be able to answer quickly, because we're so good at problem solving. You'll say half the question or half the issue, and I'll come back and I'll say, oh, well, I know the answer to that. In fact, with my middle daughter, I never realized this, because I've been a consultant and a behavioral specialist for most of my life, I give people advice all the time. And with my middle daughter, I realized that my whole relationship with her was about giving her advice and never shutting up and listening. And I heard her, you know, she had something happened to her where she lost her job because of a stupid boss. It was just ridiculous what he did. And then she got another job who was from somebody who heard this, and it was, and so she recovered and all that. And I heard this, and I said, we're at a family dinner, and I said, oh, wow. Well, and I started giving her advice, and she got all upset, and she got up and she left.
Did you ever see the YouTube video, it's not about the nail?
Yep. I love it. Got it on our website.
Okay. All right. So, but yep. I want to share it with our listeners. Okay. Listeners, if you have never seen this YouTube video, it's not about the nail. It is absolutely the funniest thing. The girl has a nail right in the middle of her third eye, so right between her brows, and she's talking about the pressure with the nail and how uncomfortable it is, and she's afraid it's never going to go away. And her boyfriend or spouse is saying, well, but you do have a nail in the middle of your head, and she gets very upset, like, it's not about the nail. But it's fabulous. But you're not listening. It has nothing to do with the nail. But you know, it's like, but you do have a nail in your head. Oh, I just love that. I think that is just so fabulous. And I think there is a lot to it. And that fixing stuff. I mean, yeah. But at the same time, I think that sometimes we do look for answers. So, as you said, it always is striking a balance. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Talk with Francesca. I'm speaking with James Bond. He is the author of The Secret Life of Fathers, which we actually haven't really touched on. So let's talk a little bit about major, celebrities, important people that have really been influenced by their daughters, James.
Okay, so here's the story, all right? This is the daughter talking. Tell me who you think the father is. So I would roll around the floor with Daddy. And then Mommy would come up to the door, because she knew we were inside the room, and she would say, stop doing that, you're going to break something. So Daddy would go, shh. We'd wait quietly until Mommy left and go back to rolling on the floor and having a great time. Daddy taught me how to ride a bike. He taught me how to swim. And we used to go to the amusement park, and we'd be on a roller coaster. He'd hold his hands up in the air, and we'd be screaming like little kids. We had so much fun. And then Daddy used to take me through the airports I'd be going to the airport holding hands with him. And we had such a great time. Who am I talking about?
I have no idea.
Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
Oh, wow.
Do we understand how he wouldn't take his wife on trips and to major speeches? He took his daughter Yolanda. You know, there's a whole dimension of dads that I didn't understand until I started doing the work on the book.
Huh.
There's, go ahead.
No, I was just making a sound like, it is interesting, but you know, it actually went through my head is that that must also sometimes create a challenge for a less secure woman who possibly may feel threatened by her daughter. No?
It's interesting you should say that. So I was talking to my wife about this, and her dad was, her mom's British, this British lady, and her stepdad was a fireman, a fire captain in New Jersey. And she was sitting with him, and she could remember this tender moment where he talked about this terrible thing that happened. Just after he became a fireman, he had a sister who was mentally retarded. I don't know if I said a PC, but that she was, you know, she had a mental. Anyway, you got that. So they got a call from the fire department, and it was his home. And it was just after he had become a fireman, and he came home, and his sister had crawled across a gas stove, you know, the stove, and her clothing caught fire. And he was telling her that as he came in, she was still just her last breaths, and then she died. And she called out to me, like, because it's her brother, to help her because she was in such excruciating pain. And he said it was the most terrible emotional thing that ever happened to him in his entire life. And he told this to my wife. Well, her mom came in and said, oh, no, stop talking about all this stuff. Now, here's this. He's sharing this tremendously important emotional event.
Mm-hmm.
But she said, my mom felt threatened. You know, like, why are you sharing that with her? You should be sharing it with me and all that. There's another thing. There's, like, the last interview in the book. The book is the interviews or excerpts from interviews. And this apparently is common, and it's tragic, that this lady asked us to interview her dad, who's a famous celebrity, so I can't say who it was. And he divorced her mom when she was about 3 or 4, but stayed connected with her. When she was 18 years old, he cut off all contact with her, even changed his phone number until for 9 years. And then when she was about 27, she bumped into him in New York City and had a great connection with him. They connected with mommy, daughter, daddy, and all that, and have been close friends for 3 years. But she couldn't understand why, and never wanted to bring it up. Why did he break off contact with her? She told us after, do you know what you've done? I was like, I'm sorry. She said, no, you got my dad to talk about the elephant in the room. His next wife said, I want you to break off all connections with your past family if you want to be with me.
Oh my gosh.
And he was ashamed that he did that. But she told us, which was profound, is she was sensitized about even dating guys because she thought she didn't know why her dad wouldn't talk to her anymore. And she figured I'm always afraid, she was on eggshells, that there's something she would say to a guy that he would never want to talk with her again and she wouldn't know what it is, without realizing she didn't do anything wrong. It was her dad who was a bit of a putz, basically. But but it's common with guys too, which is, I tell guys this, and it's amazing how many guys will come forward and tell me, oh yeah, that's my story. And suddenly they bow their head in shame, and they talk about how bad they feel about it. But
I think that's actually quite common. I think that's very common, and not necessarily with the second wife either. A husband and a wife have their first child, and it's, you know, a little girl, and it's daddy's little girl, and the wife is just a baby herself. Maybe she's 22, 23 years old, and, you know, she then ends up feeling threatened, and then, but that's a whole other show. But so how do daughters have influence over their dads?
Well, they change. So there are a few things. First, a daughter is connected to the father for life.
Yep.
A daughter is blood. A wife or a spouse or a girlfriend or a partner is chosen but not connected by blood.
Mm-hmm.
So Steve Jobs is a great example because he pretended that Lisa was not his daughter, even named his first computer Lisa, or one of his early computers Lisa, And then eventually explained that, yes, it was named after you, even though he came up with this cock and bull story about where the L-I-S-A, the name Lisa, came from. Mm-hmm. But he couldn't get rid of her because she's connected with him through blood for his entire life. She's going to be his daughter. Okay, now not every man is going to, you know, honor that, but most do. You know, we hear about the ones that don't, but most do, okay?
Because of blood, you're saying, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. We're connected to her.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, with a wife, you can go like, well, you're annoying me, and I don't like how you're attacking me and my what I'm doing and everything, and you know what? We're going for a divorce. You can't do that with a daughter. I mean, I guess you could stop talking to her. I mean, I get it from my daughters. I mean, they're tough on me. We had this guy who was a drug dealer, an ex-drug dealer, and he said, there's something so profound about, I was holding my daughter, you know, about a month or so after she was born, I was holding her in my hands, and she was looking up at me, and then I suddenly got this pang of fear came over me, and I realized, when she realizes what her daddy does for a living, she's going to be ashamed of him. And I couldn't bear having my daughter ashamed of me. And I decided at that moment I quit selling drugs and I went to work for my dad.
Wow. Very powerful.
And I had one of the most powerful attorneys in the country who said almost the same thing. He said, you know, his daughter, there's nothing more powerful, there's nothing more disturbing than a 3-year-old with her hands on her hips saying, you are a mean, mean person. And he said to her, young lady, you don't talk to your father that way. And she says, I have to tell you because everybody's afraid of you. And so he said the next day he went into work and he said, you know, they've got like 100 attorneys in his office. He's really powerful. And he says to his secretary, am I a mean person? And she leans across the desk and says, do you want the truth? And he said, I never looked at myself through other people's eyes before. I never looked at myself and how other people, you know, how I treat other people. I was concerned about do your job and what's your problem, and if you don't do this, you'll get fired, without realizing that, you know, people have lives. Mm-hmm. And he said, I went from being self-centered, where the universe, the entire universe was wrapped around me, to suddenly realizing, how do I fit in? How do other people perceive me? And mostly because I was concerned that my daughter would be ashamed of me.
Fascinating. Do you think men change once they have a daughter?
Yes. In fact, there's so they did major studies of Supreme Court justices and of CEOs, for example. Let's talk about Supreme Court justices. So they found that men who are Supreme Court justices, once they had a daughter and she was like about 2 or 3 years old, so talking age, their votes for major, major votes that they have to deal with, changed dramatically, and suddenly went positively towards women's rights and helping women. Okay, so the best example is Harry Blackmun. Harry Blackmun was a Supreme Court justice who was a staunch Republican, who was appointed by Richard Nixon and who was anti women's rights.
Mm-hmm.
And after his daughter Sally was born, as she started becoming a teenager, she started having debates with her dad.
Oh wow!
And his votes changed dramatically, and suddenly he became a staunch supporter of women's rights to the point where he became the deciding vote on Roe versus Wade, which gave women the right for abortion.
Right, right.
And it was, he says, and she says, because of the debates he had with his daughter and discussions.
What about Dick Cheney's daughter, Mary? I mean,
yep.
She influenced his support of gay rights against his Republican Party's platform.
That's right. Oh, it just goes, who but Ivanka Trump could have gotten her dad, the climate change denier, to meet with Al Gore?
Amazing, isn't it, huh?
You know, so, Daddy, can you do this? I mean, But it's kryptonite for men.
Yeah, no kidding. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Talk with Francesca. We're discussing The Secret Life of Fathers. It's also the name of a book that my guest, author James Bond, has written. So how are women affected by their fathers?
More profoundly than most women realize.
I feel that my father was a great influence in my life. I don't know that that's the case with everyone. So tell us more.
So Lady Maggie, who's a copywriter in Santa Barbara, was telling me she read the book. And in the beginning of the book, you get a lot of men, a lot of dads who are struggling to have a better relationship with their daughter. But the more they seem to try to get closer, the more they seem to push them away. And as I said before, a lot of it is because we give advice instead of listening, things like that. But for whatever reason, she's Irish. She was born in Ireland, and she's in her 60s now. And when she was a young kid, as she was reading this, she suddenly got this memory of her dad coming in from drinking with the boys, which is very common in Ireland. That's what you do. There's almost nothing else to do at some places. And he came in smelling of booze, reeking of booze, and he came up to me and said, "Could I help you with your homework?" And I said, "No," disgusted. And he turned and he left. He didn't leave the house forever, but he left at that moment. And she says, "I bet, I never even thought of this. My dad is dead about 10 years ago, but I bet he was trying to show me he loves me in the only way he knows how. He knew how." And in fact, after that, I can think of other times when he approached me. I think my dad was afraid of me because I would humiliate him, just from my tone of voice and what I said. And she said, "All my life, I'm in my 60s. I've never had a close relationship with a guy. I always thought guys were these cold fish, basically, just like my dad. And I think I got it wrong. I think my dad," she says, "I feel bad that I can't sit down with my dad and chat with him now. Because I think, here I've gone my whole life, I've had some flings, but never a close relationship with a guy, and I bet I misunderstood what men are all about."
Well, I think women do choose men similar to their fathers. I often say I have a wonderful uncle. He's 86 years old. He's just an amazing, amazing man. And, I could go on and on about him. He took care of his wife who had Alzheimer's for many years. And then when she passed on about 3 years ago, he started living his life, in a different way now. But he would say that, he wouldn't have given up 1 minute of that life with her. But, he plays a trombone and he goes to, hospice and helps out at the church. And he's just an incredible, incredible man. And I often say, how will my cousin ever find a man like him, and because women do tend to look for men that are similar to their dads. Unfortunately, we only have a few minutes left, James, but I wanted to ask you, what were the biggest eye openers when you started to talk to dads about their daughters?
That most of the men I talk to, regardless of how positive or negative a relationship they had with their daughters, most of the men I talked to wanted a better relationship with their daughter, a closer relationship with their daughter, but they didn't know how. And connected to that, most of them wanted to be able to tell their daughters how much the daughter affected their life and how important the daughter is in their life, but they were prevented through social and maybe the brain connection, whatever else. And so it's like, I want to tell her how important she is to me. I just don't know how.
So give our listening audience in the last minute, I hate to put you in a box like this, but some tips for fathers.
Tip for dads? Sit down with your daughter. Send her a text right now. If you're driving, please don't do it now. But send her a text and tell her, "I love you," and explain why, how much she means to you. Like, what is it about you that's changed and different? And it's amazing how just that simple thing, send her a box of chocolates. as a surprise with a handwritten note in it that tells her how much you love her. And just watch what happens.
How can people find out more about the Father-Daughter Project that you founded?
Well, we have a website, thefatherdaughterproject.com. And we've got a lot of free stuff on there, which is really great. And there's information about the book as well.
James Bond, The Secret Life of Fathers. Thanks so much for being on Talk with Francesca today. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, thank you, Francesca. It was fun.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye. All right, up next, too busy to get in shape. Lene Urban has pieced together the formula to eliminate stress, lose weight, and transform women's health without a diet or going to the gym. When we come back, you will stop wishing and start doing. Stay with me here.
Captain Lord Mansion is the ultimate bed and breakfast experience. It's the only AAA 4-diamond bed and breakfast in Kennebunkport. But it's so much more. It's the perfect, elegant, romantic getaway. Relax at their day spa. Be pampered in your room with heated floors, jetted showers and tubs, gas fireplaces, king and queen beds, flat screen TVs, and all the quaintness with all the modern conveniences. Be surrounded by impeccable gardens, waterfalls, fountains, a putting green, a charming gift shop, wine cellar. The list goes on and on, including a full 3-course breakfast. This is a stay that you will never forget. Engage in our special offers. Call 207-967-3141. 207-967-3141. CaptainLordMansion.com. In Kennebunkport, Maine. Memories and elegance await you.
Life is constantly evolving. Relationships beginning, relationships ending, careers progress while some fail to thrive, fortunes abundant or only 2 pennies to rub together. When life is at a crossroads, psychic medium Ann Donnell has helped thousands locally and all over the country, including myself, with her psychic insight and guidance. Ann is not only a professional psychic medium, but she's also the girl next door and extremely down to earth. Once you meet her, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. So visit her or book your appointment today at anndonnell.com to find out about her offerings and hear what people are saying about Ann's readings. That's www.anndonnell.com. Curious? Check her out. You'll be glad you did. Are you looking for an authentic Italian meal in an intimate setting? Then you might just want to venture out to Boston this weekend and dine at Taramia's Ristorante. A true gem among all those rhinestones in Boston's North End, this cozy trattoria with stucco walls and beam ceilings specializes in creative interpretations of Italian classics. Like the cuisine here, the atmosphere is elegant yet understated. Since opening in 1993, Taramia has aimed to convince diners that there's always more to Italian food than red sauce. Over the years, the inventive and beloved restaurant has done a great deal of convincing. And best of all, it's reasonably priced. This best-kept secret is worth the trip. Call 617-523-3112 or visit TaramiaRestaurante.com. All right, we are back. I think it's just part of human nature to sometimes feel dissatisfied with our life and our bodies. We can be oh so hard on ourselves, which of course, as we know, then ends up harming our self-esteem and obviously our overall health. Add to that trying to find time for work, friends, family, errands, and the next thing you know, we've added some pretty unhealthy habits to our lifestyle, which in turn, of course, makes us feel worse. Lene Urban is here to the rescue, and she's with us today now. Welcome, Lene. Thanks for joining us today on Talk with Francesca. And change us, help us from stop wishing to start acting.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So tell us, you have so much to share with us today. Tell us about your Operation Fix My Life.
Yeah, thank you. I'm really, just really excited about the kind of goal that I set for myself around this time last year to sort of stop wishing for certain goals that I had for my life and for my family and for my future. I wanted to stop having to just dream about fulfilling those goals and actually take action to achieve them. And
was there something an impetus that got you going in that direction?
You know, it's really funny. It was actually a promotion at work.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of the opposite of what you would think.
Right.
I got a promotion at work. I got a raise, and I felt like, you know what? I'm on my way. I'm finally on my way to achieving the place in my career that I want, to achieving, you know, the financial goals that I want. And so I sat down and I looked at all of our expenses on paper, and I saw all of our expenses, and I saw, you know, our combined household income, and I said to myself, this does not add up. Why is it that we are so much further along in our careers and financially, but we're still sort of struggling to make ends meet? You know, why? Where's the disconnect here? And the catalyst for Operation Fix My Life actually started financially, where I wanted to start setting financial goals for myself and to start working toward achieving those goals. And then it snowballed into, well, while I'm working on my money, let's talk about my fitness. Let's talk about my health. Why is it that I can't maintain a consistent regimen? Let's talk about my home. Why can't I keep my home together? And let's talk about, you know, some of the things that I dream about, some of the talents that I have that I'm letting go by the wayside, and I'm not stepping into those. Why am I just sitting on these things? And so Operation Fix My Life started off as just a documentation of me saying, I'm going to set some goals for myself and for my future, mm-hmm. and I'm going to show you all how and what steps I take to actually achieve them.
Mm-hmm. And so how did you manifest this?
I'm sorry, say it again.
And so how did you manifest all these changes?
Well, what I did was I sat down and I got out a piece of paper and a pen, and I wrote down all of my goals, everything that I had in my head that I wanted to achieve. And then I separated them into categories, and I came up with the categories, finances, fitness, family, and future. And I wrote down each of the goals within these categories, and I decided one at a time to start doing some research online just from other people who were previously in situations that I found myself in and who found a way to overcome their situations and to achieve their goals. I just started looking for people with similar stories and researching the paths that they took to achieve their goals. And I said, not only am I going to follow these same paths, but I'm going to document myself in real time, taking the steps to achieve the same types of goals they achieved. So that's where it started.
Good for you. But now, what were you doing before you became a nutrition and lifestyle coach?
So my career is in higher education, actually. I've been in higher ed since 2008, right out of college, working with different types of universities, online universities, community colleges, working with non-traditional students. And when I got to this point where I wanted to begin this journey, I was actually working for a higher education company that just supports non-traditional online students in seeking degree programs through colleges that have their most successful programs on campus, and now want to turn those campus programs into online programs. I was working within sort of the administrative team within higher education.
Okay. And so then you created this Operation Fix My Life, and you actually have it's a course, right? It goes for what, four weeks, 5 weeks, right?
Yeah, it's the course that I created. It's nutrition-based, and it's a four-week course, just in terms of how long it takes to get through the modules. But the course includes one-on-one and group coaching. And that group coaching and one-on-one coaching extends a little bit past the course, because I find that when it comes to someone trying to change their nutrition, it's not enough to read theory and to read information on how to start dieting to achieve a certain goal weight. What they have to do is they have to learn how to tweak the information that they have to fit their lifestyle, to fit their individual circumstances, their individual struggles. And so the coaching part of the course extends a little bit past the course, because I want to use my time to be able to work one-on-one individually with the ladies in the course and make sure that I can guide them in tweaking the information from the course to make sure that it fits their lifestyle, and also to make sure that once they do get it and the light bulb goes off and it clicks and they find what works for them, that then they learn how to maintain their success.
What made you want to start helping other women?
I remember very specifically talking to my husband about this. I had struggled for 8 years, off and on in between my pregnancies, with weight regain and weight rebound, and I couldn't figure out why I couldn't get a handle on my health. I couldn't figure out why I couldn't go more than 3 days sticking to a diet, why I couldn't go more than a couple weeks sticking to a fitness plan. And so when I finally found the answer and I found what worked for me, I was so blown away, not only by how simple the answer was, but I was blown away by the misinformation. I was blown away by all of the strategies that I was following from the mainstream fitness industry. And they were essentially making things worse. They were essentially not only causing me to regress back to old habits, but every time I regressed, I regressed back even worse than where I started off at. And so when I learned all this and figured all this out, I started taking a look at all the other women around me, all the other women killing themselves in the gym, running painfully outside, trying to reach their goal weight. And I said to myself, we've all been duped. This is not the way. There's a better way. And I have to figure out how to shout it out from the mountaintops to as many women as I possibly can that there is a better and more efficient and more sustainable way to achieve your health and fitness goals.
And that's when you came up with the rest-based living.
And that's the essence, that's the foundation of the rest-based living course.
All right. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Talk with Francesca. I'm speaking with Lene Urban. She has a program called Operation Fix My Life. So tell us, Lene, about this rest-based living. It sounds lovely. It sounds like a beautiful thing. It makes me feel not so guilty because I keep saying, I really should go to the gym. But yet, you know, something I love to walk. I love my pet. I walk my pet and mm-hmm. you know, I feel, I guess on some level that, you know, I get the fresh air. I, you know, kind of tune out from the world for a while. And mm-hmm. I do that a couple times a day. And it just, I guess it just feels like it's enough for me. Deep down inside, that's what it feels.
Mm. Yeah. I think that the essence of the course, it'll be difficult for some women who feel like they have to kill themselves in order to achieve whatever physical fitness goal that they're after, whatever weight loss goal that they have. Just because, you know, when we exercise really hard, what's happening is we're releasing a lot of endorphins. Mm-hmm. We're releasing a lot of mm-hmm. pleasure hormones that make us feel good.
Right.
But these pleasure hormones that make us feel good and you know, make us feel like we actually achieved something, these are also the same hormones that hold on to the stubborn fat that we just can't seem to get rid of. These are the hormones responsible for holding on to those last 10 pounds that we can't seem to shed no matter what we do. And so the rest-based living course teaches how to tweak your nutrition, how to tweak what you're eating, how to, if you're already going to the gym, you love, you know, certain types of workouts. The course teaches you how to tweak those workouts to make sure that you're not elevating those hormones so much that they're actually counterproductive to your goals. And the course also teaches how to force yourself to take that rest, to take the rest that's scientifically proven to lower those hormones and allow the body to release those extra pounds. And then it teaches how to actually sustain the results that you achieve.
So how'd you come up with the plan?
Well, it's funny because it was a combination of trial and error and research. I did, for 3 years, I did research on weight loss tools that are very specific to the female metabolism. And what's infuriating to me is that there isn't a lot of information out there in the mainstream fitness world about the female metabolism specifically, and how it is that our weight is so much controlled by our hormones, not at all by how many calories we eat versus how many calories we burn. That's important too. That matters too. But as far as how estrogen and progesterone and cortisol and adrenaline and noradrenaline, how all of these hormones inside of us, the impact that they play on our willpower, our ability to stick to certain guidelines and plans in order to achieve our weight loss goals, there isn't a lot of information out there. It's not as widely available. So for 3 years, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, so for 3 years, I dug up everything I could, every piece of information I could find on the female metabolism and female hormones and how those hormones impact weight loss and weight gain. And I tried at the same time, I was trying different things on my own. I found a fat loss company based out of North Carolina. They have a lot of different just online resources. And I followed some of their tips in terms of exercise and movement and nutrition. And so it was through my education through that company and then the research that I had on my own that I was able to put the pieces together myself and create a plan that is universal for women in general.
So how is your course broken down?
I'm sorry, one more time.
How is your course broken down?
Oh, so the course is broken down into 5 different modules to be completed over 4 weeks. The first module just focuses on the foundation of stress and stress hormones and how those hormones impact weight gain and weight rebound and weight plateau. And then the second module focuses on nutrition. And the nutrition module is all about tweaking what you're currently eating, what you're already doing, not introducing some new fancy crazy diet that you won't be able to stick to after 3 weeks, but focusing on what you're currently eating and tweaking those things in order to start reducing calories without elevating, you know, your hunger and your cravings for everything you're not supposed to have. Then the third module focuses on the rest-based living, rest and relaxation activities. The fourth module is about movement. So that module is for those women that hate exercise and feel like they can't achieve their weight loss goals because they hate to exercise. Mm-hmm. This module would be perfect for them. For those women that love exercise and can't live without it, this module will also be perfect for them because it would teach them how to tweak their workout routines, like I already said. In order to achieve their goals. And then the fifth module is a mindset module. It's what I call hashtag the bounce back. And it's about furious forward progress, how consistency beats perfection when it comes to sustaining weight loss.
Mm-hmm. So this program is basically about nutrition and weight loss, pretty much.
Yeah, about nutrition. But I would say the focus isn't necessarily on weight loss. Mm-hmm. I would say the focus is more so on stress management.
Oh, okay. And can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So our hormones that play a part in weight loss, these are stress hormones. These are hormones that are elevated due to stressors, due to stressful environments, due to just the stress of being a woman, the stress of having to take care of a family and go to work and to take care of a home. You talk about those stressors, and then there are just other factors out of our control that are constantly raising cortisol and adrenaline and noradrenaline. And we don't realize that these outside factors that bring us so much stress are the same factors that hold on to the weight that we don't want. They're the same stress hormones that as soon as we go on a diet or start a workout plan, these are the hormones that's fighting us to get off that diet and workout plan as quickly as possible and to get back to the ice cream in the freezer.
Mm-hmm.
These are the same stress hormones that as soon as we start a rigorous workout, these are the hormones that all of a sudden we wake up the next morning and I'm too tired to go to the gym. I need to hit the snooze button. I need, maybe I'll skip my workout this morning. It's all interconnected. And so if we learn how to manage our stress and we learn how to manage those stress hormones, then the weight loss is easy.
So how do you manage, how would you recommend managing stress?
Well, my first, my main recommendation is to run away from all your responsibilities and go to a desert island and live the rest of your life in peace. But if that's not an option.
Running away. I actually interviewed a woman about a month ago who wrote a book about just that, running away, and how that's a good thing
running
sometimes.
Away.
It can be. It can be. As long as it's just as long as it isn't taken to excess. I think sometimes just really letting go is a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I definitely encourage that, even just temporarily, to run away and go, you know, find a place of peace. But definitely, because we can't 100% permanently run away from our responsibilities, all we have to do is incorporate certain activities into our daily lives that will force those stress hormones to lower on their own. So you can continue to be superwoman and, you know, spin 30 different plates at the same time and have all these different responsibilities. Yes, they will raise your stress hormones, but if you only take about 30 minutes a day doing a rest and relaxation activity that has been scientifically proven to reduce those stress hormones,
like
taking a bubble bath in a dimly lit bathroom with some candles and some really soft music playing.
Oh, I love that idea.
Yeah. Meditation is huge.
Oh, absolutely.
Meditation is huge for reducing stress hormones. And do you know what else, ladies?
What?
Physical intimacy, mm-hmm, followed by a period of cuddling.
Mm-hmm.
That is the number one stress reducer. Isn't that interesting? That is the number one stress reducer for us women. And what's even more fun is that it does not have the same impact on men.
Too bad, guys.
So those are just a few examples.
Oh my gosh, it sounds lovely. It's I feel like I'm ready for my bubble bath a little early in the day for that, but
awesome.
But that's okay. But you know, I like the whole rest-based living concept, because I think that, you know, women don't really give themselves permission. I think the way men do, dare I say that. But, I mean, I think women tend to spend all their time taking care of others rather than taking care of their own needs, you know.
Yes.
And so I'd just love you to share with us, you know, why do you think women don't ask for that help?
You know, I think a part of it is societal, it's cultural. And another part of it is, I believe, you know, just biological. It's how we're made up.
We love it.
We
love taking care. Yeah.
We love, you know, that we are built and we were created a certain way to really nurture and love and care for the people that we love the most. And then I think part of it is cultural also. If we grew up with mothers who sacrificed themselves and sacrificed everything they had to, you know, to take care of their children and to take care of their home, then as a woman, we grow up just expecting to follow that same path.
And I think that's hard for women today, that, you know, especially with, you know, the cost of living and needing the two incomes, mm-hmm, and, you know, the women have to work just as hard as the guys, but they still really carry a lot more of the responsibility of taking care of the home. That's just ingrained in us. Right.
Yes.
Right.
And that makes it, and that's what makes it worse, is that back in the day when a one income household sufficed, perhaps it was okay for women to bear the burden of the responsibility of taking care of the home. But today, 78% of women with children between the ages of 3 and 17 are working. And so there is added stress. There's added stress of having to leave the home or even work inside the home and take care of responsibilities outside the home, and then come home to a second full-time job and still take care of the home. And that cultural expectation is still ingrained in us. It hasn't caught up to the fact that we don't have this limitless energy to do both, you know, and to do both really well. And so that's why I wanted to create this course. And part of, you know, one of the things that I'm emphasizing with the women that I'm working with right now in this course is at some point we have to be selfish and we have to say, I am giving everyone 23 hours and 30 minutes of my life. I need to take at least 30 minutes for me, because if you don't take those 30 minutes for you, then how long, how far do you think you can go maintaining that kind of load? You're not going to have the physical, emotional, and mental health years down the line to be able to take care of the people that you're killing yourself for right now.
Absolutely.
So take these 30 minutes, focus on yourself, because if you do, then guess what? That increases the chances that you'll be here long enough to see the people you love grow up and to see your legacy continue.
Lene Urban, you have been a pleasure today on Talk with Francesca. Thanks so much for joining us. Operation Fix My Life. Thank you. You take care. Lots
Thanks,
of great
Francesca.
Information. Okay. All right. We've got to wrap things up and say goodbye. Hope you enjoyed the show as much as I did. See you next week. Same time, same place. Make it a great week. Life is constantly evolving. Relationships beginning, relationships ending, careers progress while some fail to thrive, fortunes abundant are only two pennies to rub together. When life is at a crossroads, psychic medium Ann Donnell has helped thousands locally and all over the country, including myself, with her psychic insight and guidance. Ann is not only a professional psychic medium, but she's also the girl next door and extremely down to earth. Once you meet her, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. So visit her or book your appointment today at anndonnell.com to find out about her offerings and hear what people are saying about Ann's readings. That's www.anndonnell.com. Curious? Check her out. You'll be glad you did. Go ahead, indulge yourself every Saturday from 6:30 to 7:30 a.m. Tune in to Talk with Francesca and join me for provocative conversation, intriguing stories, and inspiration. So sit back and relax, or be stimulated, or both, because being connected feels good. It's contagious, and I'm personally spreading it around. Turn your Saturday into something to talk about all week long. Don't miss Talk with Francesca every Saturday from 6:30 to 7:30 a.m. Come visit me at my website at talkwithfrancesca.com.